Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. For the past 25 years, Michael Sullivan has been making sure politicians, campaigns, and advocacy groups play by the rules as the head of the State Office of Campaign and Political Finance. He'll be stepping down after the new year. He's here now in Studio 3 to talk with us about his six terms as the office's director and the trends in campaign finance going forward. Mike, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Six terms is a lot.
It feels like I've been there forever.
Yeah. Listen, politics is arguably a different beast than it was six terms ago in the mid-1990s. What's the most different, do you think, about the office now than when you started it when you started in it 25 years ago?
Within the office itself, electronic filing and the speed at which we do things.
So what does that look like?
Well, when I started, if you wanted to see a report or you wanted to see what a candidate was doing, you had to come to our office and, you know, ask to see the file. Now you sit at home and click on your computer and there it is, all in living color as soon as it's filed by the candidate.
So it used to be physically people were there and now do you not see anyone?
The day when reports were due, the line out the door was hilarious because every reporter in town wanted to see the report first. Frank Phillips would be in there and he'd be fighting with Shaka, trying to figure out who was, you know, going to get the story out first.
So has that made other things possible for your office to do that it used to not have time and resources to do? Or is managing the digitization of all of this just a different set of responsibilities?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think what has happened with electronic filing and the software that we've built in-house is that we've been able to notice trends. It's helped us with investigations. We've done a tremendous amount of investigations, and they know about it here on dark money. Where's the money really coming from? Or funneled money with straw donors. So it's helped us manage our expectations and what we do. It's helped us educate candidates because people have moved into the digital world. And it's made the job a lot more interesting, actually.
What's more interesting about it to you now than, let's say, five terms ago?
The ability to understand what's really going on in real time instead of waiting till after everything is over and then analyzing everything on paper and looking for trends. When reports come in now or the questions that we get now, we keep a phone log of our questions so I understand what the issues are and what kind of advice we're giving out. It makes it so much smoother to understand everything and so much quicker. And we see trends across the country. We see them here early, dark money early here.
So let's stay on that for a second. You came on Radio Boston a couple years ago to discuss a record fine that your office leveled against a pro-charter school group. As I understand it, that fine remains the largest in state history. How do you reflect on that now?
Good work by our audit department, sitting down and looking at the reports that were filed and not understanding why a 501c4 was able to funnel that much money to a ballot question committee, that there had to be something behind it. And we used the techniques that we developed over the years and the subpoena power that we had, and we were able to pull it all together and figure out who the people were behind the money. And I think that's what the voters deserve to know. People should know who's funding the candidates' campaigns. That's what we are there for. We are there for disclosure and we are there for education and to help people understand the statute, get people to run, you know, by making sure they understand what they're supposed to do. And you put all of that together, it was really an abomination to see. I don't even know how many millions of dollars were going through there. But it was frustrating to me as a voter, as an individual, and as the head of an agency that nobody was behind this money because we knew somebody was.
So who was and how big was the fine?
A lot of major names that people in the financial world would recognize. Some people within the administration at the time were contributors as well. I honestly, if you asked me right now, I couldn't tell you their names because
once it's done, it's done.
It's sort of like when I officiate a football game.
Yeah.
It's the blue team and the red team, and when it's over, I can't remember who did what.
We do know that there were two Baker administration appointees,
yeah.
And I think the fine was northward of $400,000.
Yeah, well, it was every penny they had left in their campaign account.
So I want to ask, a fine of that size, do you think it's had lasting effect? Does that have the kind of chilling effect that you want on future behavior by other organizations that get involved in ballot initiatives, campaign initiatives?
There's no doubt in my mind that it had a chilling effect and B, an educational effect. And in the next set of ballot questions in 2018, in which a lot of money was spent, remember the healthcare question, the nurses question, a lot of money was spent on that. And the amount of questions that we got from people about what needs to be reported, how do we disclose this, how do we do this, we want to make sure we do it right. Because I have a saying that I use in the office is that 95% of the people who are involved in politics want to do it right and can. 2 or 3% want to do it right, need a little help, and 2 or 3% want to mess around a little bit. So our job is to help 97% of the people, and I think we did a good job.
So that ballot question would have mandated nurse staffing ratios, and the spending was over $24 million, almost $25 million mm-hmm. spent. So do you feel pretty confident that that money was spent appropriately, transparently, legally?
I do.
And is it hard with a – I mean, that was the biggest ever. Mm-hmm. It will the office be challenged going forward to keep up with the rate and pace of spending and keep it clean, for lack of a better word?
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt. You know, we have a great staff, tremendous staff, a good audit department, good legal department. But they will be challenged. We're challenged every day. New law just came in that I've been pushing for 8 years on how candidates for the legislature and certain mayoral candidates have to file their reports. And it's going to be more accurate and the disclosure is going to be quicker and it's going to be cleaner. And so there's going to be some challenges in that regard in doing the transition. There's going to be some challenges in where the money comes from. I mean, I read today, I don't even remember the name of the group, but there's another ballot question coming where they had 87,000 signatures filed yesterday. So we know that that's going to continue to come down the road. And the interesting thing with ballot questions, there are no limits. Anybody, any entity can give. It just has to be disclosed.
Yeah, and I do want to clarify that nearly $25 million was spent by one side. It was just the defeat side with that ballot initiative. So we are talking about breathtaking scale mm-hmm. of money. So how would you say – all right, let me backtrack and say this. We are certainly living in a time where there's a constant concern and awareness about the quality, fairness, legality of elections. We hear about it a lot.
We do.
So how well do you think Massachusetts stacks up around the country in this space?
So this is the blow my own horn toot?
You go for it.
Okay. I think we stack up very well. We go to a national conference, which is in a couple of weeks this year in Chicago, and people are always talking to us about how we're able to do what we do in terms of the cases that we close. And one of the greatest things about this agency is the way the director is selected. It's the director is independent. The person is selected in a bipartisan fashion. They give the term for 6 years, and essentially the people who choose you go away. They trust you to do your job. And with that kind of freedom and the integrity within my office, I think we've done a really good job, and we're able to make sure that the public understands what it is that candidates should do.
So that almost changed. A bill that passed last month in one of its earlier versions would have done away with that particular system of appointing you. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you feel it's important to preserve that kind of approach to appointing the director.
I do think that whatever the decision is that they make, and that's the decision of the legislature, the person who has the job has to have that independence level to do the job correctly. And I will say this, and you know, the legislature takes its share of hits. Every single time from 1994 on that I went over there to ask for additional funding for whatever I needed, we were granted that money.
Why?
Every single time.
Why do you think that is?
I would hope that they trust what we do is done with integrity, is done for the betterment of politics in general, for candidacies, for elections. I mean, some things as simple as back in the old days when we had a lot of paper, I remember going over to a state rep from Salem and saying, hey, we need a new filing system. And they granted it. And then when it came time to do the electronic filing and we needed all the hardware for computers and software, they were able to give us the money and there was never a second thought. They never blinked.
Let's compare and contrast that to where we are at the national level. The Federal Election Commission right now has three vacancies. That means it has three active members only.
Yeah, I keep waiting for that call.
Yeah. All right. You heard it here first, listeners. But I do want to ask you, why is that the case and how big of a deal is it from a practical perspective that half that, you know, commission is vacant?
Oh, it's a huge mess.
Why?
It's just a mess.
What's going on there?
Well, the first problem is that the commission is set up to deadlock. There's three Democrats and three Republicans, or no more than three from one political party. And so if you've got someone on one side of the ledger, whichever one it might be, who really doesn't want to enforce the statute, you can get a deadlock every time because you need four votes to move forward. The system there, they might need an odd number if they're going to go to the voting system. I don't think the system that we have works on a national level because we're much smaller. But the way it's working right now, it's not.
So that's important because we're right around the corner from presidential 2020. What are the kinds of things that the FEC should be doing and can't do when it's hobbled this way?
Well, I mean, today I read that Duncan Hunter pled guilty to serious campaign crimes using his campaign for personal use.
Out of California.
And that's the kind of thing, the kind of enforcement that the commission could be doing with the cases. Instead, DOJ is bringing them up because the FEC is stuck. They could be doing a lot more at the commissioner level. I'm sure the staff is doing the work, but in order to open up a case, you need to have a vote from the commission to do so. So the staff can recommend it, but if there's no one to vote, then you're basically hamstrung.
So let's stay at the national level a minute longer, because next month marks the 10th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, which essentially allowed unlimited election spending by corporations and unions. I want to know, what do you think has changed most in campaigns and elections in the decades since that ruling? And I wonder if you think it's had an effect in Massachusetts particularly.
I think the sheer amount of money that's involved and the corporations that are involved that weren't previously involved, they sort of saw that as a hands-off. And when Citizens United came down, the doors just blew open and the floodgates opened and people were able to spend – or corporations were able to spend as much as they wanted to. Initially here, I thought we would see it at the local level. I really thought that there would be an instance where like a developer of a small company was upset with a local candidate and decided to throw $10,000 into the city council race and beat that person. That didn't happen. It happened. We saw a lot of money in the mayoral race in 2013 for the mayor of Boston. And then we started to see the 527 Republican Governors Association show up. And 527s are entities that are able to receive corporate donations. And then the 527 decides where to spend the money. And it's not raised specifically for one candidacy. So once those floodgates opened and the money started to flow, it really came. I mean, we were drenched.
So the big races.
The big races now.
So what do you think are the biggest trends in campaign finance and spending that, you know, the average voter here in the Commonwealth should be aware of going forward?
Dark money. Know where the money's coming from. Know what candidates are out there and what they're doing. Where is their funding coming from? And it's hard to do because people want to hide the money. That's what everyone talks about. You know, who's supporting these people? You see those grainy ads, you know, and it's people for good government. Well, who is that? Well, we're not going to tell you our donors because we didn't use the magic words that said support or oppose. We use things like candidate X is a bad person. Call candidate X and tell him to be a good person. Well, when you don't use those magic words, you generally don't have to say who the donors are.
And so you think there's a loophole there that people need to pay attention to.
Oh, there are huge loopholes everywhere.
So I know you mentioned earlier some refereeing, and you do referee high school yeah. sports games. I think that's kind of a love of yours, right?
Oh, it's great. I've been doing it for 35 years.
So are there parallels between what you do for fun and what you do for work?
Every day. And I'll tell you, the biggest one is common sense. And I'll give you an example. In football, if you run sweep right and the left tackle holds, it generally doesn't have any effect on the play, so let's use common sense. The term we use is CSO, common sense officiating. We have a similar term here when we get complaints. And we got a complaint the other day that somebody should be fined because they told people to bring a plate of cookies to an event. We call it MEGA. It means make it go away.
Common sense officiating.
We try it.
So what are you going to do in your retirement?
Officiate.
Officiate.
Actually, I might do a little consulting. We'll see. Maybe the FEC will call. I'm dead serious about that. That's someplace I'd like to go.
All right. I am paying attention to the fact that you just said that. That is Mike Sullivan, outgoing director of the State Office of Campaign and Political Finance. Mike, I appreciate you being here. Thanks.
Thank you.